Calendar is Beneke v. Barnhart. Counsel?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Mark Caldwell. I'm here this morning representing Ms. Beneke in this Social Security case. As a preliminary matter, with the Court's permission, I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, counsel, please try to keep track of the 2 minutes yourself. I'll try to remind you, but it's your responsibility. It has a what?
Has it.
Oh, okay. Well, you just lost a little time, but go ahead.
This is an interesting case because it is a case involved in appeal by a claimant who actually, in a sense, got what she wanted, which was a remand for further proceedings. But the primary...
I thought she wanted her benefits.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
There were two positions before the court. One, of course, the remand for benefits. The other, asking for remand and further proceedings. In other words, she got half a loaf, not a whole loaf. I checked this morning, and Barney has not been overruled. And I think that is the essence of this case. We are dealing with an abuse of discretion standard, but really what we're dealing with is whether the district court committed an error of law. By definition, it's an abuse of discretion. We remain for the proceedings rather than for outright award of benefits. The commissioner notes that no decision of this court has held that a district court abuses its discretion by remanding for further administrative proceedings rather than for award of benefits, and I believe that's true. But I don't think that's an insurmountable hurdle. The basic law remains the same. In this case, the district court, and why I thought it was a very good decision, that was in the last 2 pages, gave controlling weight to the opinions of the treating physicians, in this case the rheumatologists. Those opinions, facially and by definition, were inconsistent with the ability to sustain work on a regular and continuing basis under the condition of human rights.
Well, taking your appeal, the only issue you're raising is, and yours is the only appeal, the issue that you're raising is whether, given the district court's findings, which are not challenged, the record is so clear that she cannot perform any work in the economy that we should direct the award of benefits. And your argument, I gather, is that the medical testimony is such that there is no possible job she can perform, and that's something we can tell from the record. Is that it?
It is. Let me just take it one step further. There's no job that she can perform on a regular continuing basis.
Yes.
And I think if
And we determine that from what in the record?
From Dr. Pace's assessment form, from Dr. Love's assessment form. Primarily, those are the two treating rheumatologists who gave opinions. Both of those assessment forms gave limitations that are facially inconsistent with the ability to work 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. There is, I don't know if it's gotten to you yet, there is a case that this court decided on Tuesday, and I faxed over.
Yes, we have received it.
Okay. Well, the one thing that disturbed me about that case, I know I'm only brought to your attention, but it really isn't in my favor, is one of the reasons the court gave there for finding justification for the checklist or checkmark form. And let's be honest, that's the case of Dr. Blunt had as well. The problem with the Batson case is all it says is that's a checkmark form. We don't know what kind of checkmark form. Is it a checkmark that says can work, can't work? Well, I can see in the heartbeat that's not enough to carry the day. But what we have here is something considerably different. Here we have assessment forms that were particularly tailored toward an assessment of fibromyalgia. And we have assessment forms that gave specific function-by-function limitations. that's a far cry from the kind of assessment, for example, that the Harmon Court was looking at, where the physician basically just gave a legal conclusion, this person can't work. We don't have that here. We have very specific assessments. And that's what I think distinguishes this case from Batson, and distinguishes it from Harmon as well. And of course, the biggest distinction with Harmon is that, you know, Harmon was the case that said the vocational expert didn't get testimony about these limitations. The biggest difference with Harmon is, in Harmon, the evidence was submitted to the appeals counsel. The ALJ never saw it. Here, the ALJ had everything that we're looking at here today. And we just have to cross ourselves under Barney and Kazian and Holohan and that whole line of cases. Is the fact that the ALJ had everything in front of it and just didn't look at it properly enough to say, well, here's a second bite of the apple? I would submit not. The commissioner has cited, as the commissioner should, two recent cases that remanded for a board of benefits. Unell, which was decided in July of last year, and Clement, which was decided in August of last year. Those don't fit the cases. In Unell, the claimant's testimony was not patiently inconsistent with the ability to perform sedentary work on a regular and continuing basis. That is not the situation we have here. On its face, the evidence that was credited by the district court precludes the ability to sustain work. More troubling is the Conant decision, which stated, and I'm quoting, "We are not convinced crediting as true the doctrine is mandatory in the Ninth Circuit." I don't know what to make of that. Reading Barney and Oliver's progeny, I won't list all those cases, but you know what they are. I just can't understand how that can't be mandatory once it is found that the ALJ failed to give adequate reasons for rejecting the evidence, and the evidence is such that when accepted, would clearly require finding disability. The other problem with the Conant case is two things. One, the Conant court gave no analysis of what factors should determine whether there should be a remand for further proceedings or for awarded benefits. It simply said we have flexibility and we're exercising it. Well, I grant there's flexibility. That's what discretion is all about. But why should discretion be exercised in one fashion?
Well, the government offers a theory, which is that one way to harmonize these cases in which the court did not apply the crediting as true rule is to apply it as prudential. Then they say you apply the rule when the weight of evidence suggests that the improperly rejected evidence probably is true, and where there has been undue delay in resolving the claimant's case. If that's the standard that we should adopt, then we should look at this evidence and see whether what the doctor said was probably true and whether there has been an undue delay. Now, the government says that you have not, the claimant has not waited an unduly long time for resolution of her claim because she filed her application for benefits being disabled, and I assume supposed to have these benefits to live on, and she's only waited since March 1999. And the government thinks that's not very long, 5 years to wait for benefits. Do you agree with the government that waiting 5 years for disability benefits is not a long time?
Of course not. Let me point something out. I'm coming up on my rebuttal time, so I want to finish up here quickly. Conant relied on Burns versus Shalala. Jimmy Burns was my client. You want to know what happened to Jimmy Burns? He died before an administrative determination was made on his claim. That's the reason for the crediting as true benefit. May I reserve the rest of my time?
Yes, please.
First, 42 U.S.C. 405G expressly provides the authority. authority for such an action. Second, the Supreme Court has provided guidance in Ventura for electing to make such a decision. And that guidance is that accepting rare circumstances, the proper course is to remand the case to an administrative agency for additional investigation or explanation.
Well, that's an immigration case, isn't it?
And isn't that a, like, country condition issue? But wasn't Ventura a country condition issue in an immigration case, even further afield?
It is an INS case, but the Supreme Court did not, as appellant contends, restrict this guidance to INS cases. It clearly bases its rationale on general principles of law regarding review of decisions of administrative agencies. In fact, it relies in part on Cherry, which is an SEC case.
Well, I guess what you really need to be trying to persuade us of, what else needs to be decided to determine whether this individual gets benefits?
Well, certainly, and I will attempt to persuade you of that, but the district court also did not abuse its discretion because the Ninth Circuit has clearly demonstrated that the district court has discretion in remanding.
Well, there's no question of that. The question is whether it abused its discretion. The fact that you have discretion doesn't mean you can do anything you want. So.
I think it'd be a good idea if you answered Judge Fletcher's question, since she asked you a question. And the question is, what do you think needs to be done if it were remanded? That was the question.
Well, what are the issues that are still open as to whether this individual should get benefits?
Because of what the district court perceived as the effective analysis of the way given to treating physicians and credibility analysis. In this case, the medical evidence is simply contradictory regarding the objective medical findings are contradictory, and they do not support these two treating physicians' conclusions. Now, it may be true that they were.
Are you suggesting that she does not have this fibromyalgia?
I don't think there's contention that she does not have fibromyalgia. The issue is, which was before the district court, was what limitations that resulted in. And while it is true that two of the treating physicians used these comprehensive RFC forms, those conclusions on those forms simply were not supported by these two treating physicians' own objective medical findings.
Now, don't we have to credit her own subjective testimony as to her pain?
Well,
yes or no?
No, Your Honor.
The cases all say that we do.
Well, you know, it doesn't do any good to convince us that the district court has discretion. We have hundreds of cases about whether a district court abused its discretion. Sometimes it can do things, sometimes it doesn't. So to keep telling us it has discretion doesn't help.
And the Ninth Circuit expressly stated that remand for further proceedings was appropriate where there were outstanding issues, including whether the ALJ must credit the claimant's testimony as true.
Okay, but here the district judge found that he could not disregard the opinion of the treating physician because he didn't give specific and legitimate reasons. There was no evidence to support his conclusion. Now, hold on. What are we supposed to do? Time after time, send it back to an ALJ and say you didn't give the right reasons last time. Now give them again. And then he gives you another set of phony reasons. And then it comes up again, and you're going to tell us, no, send it back, because let him keep giving you reasons.
Well, I don't think there's any indication that they're phony reasons.
They're not legitimate reasons. That's the test. He has to give legitimate, is the word, specific and legitimate reasons. The district court said these are not specific and legitimate reasons. Now, that's not an issue that hasn't been considered. It's an issue that has been, and the agency was wrong. So, you want us to keep sending it back so they can try again?
Your Honor, that is the decision that the district court made. They made their...
That's right. They made their decision.
They made their findings for the purpose of justifying remanding the case for the administrative...
No, they made findings. These are the findings, and you're not challenging the findings. They did not give specific and legitimate reasons. Now, you want us to send it back so that they can try again?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So there's no way they can ever end this cycle. It's only been 5 years so far, and there's no way we'll ever end it, because the next time your agency gives phony reasons, you're going to come back and tell us, well, we should remand it, because... Let the agency try again.
Your Honor, I again respectfully disagree with your characterization of the reasons that the ALJ gave for not crediting the physician's opinion at phones. It may not have been sufficient for.
They may not have been legitimate, is the word. Let's call them illegitimate instead of phony. Well, disagree. This is the word. The word is that they are not legitimate. I'm reading from the district court's decision. Those are the findings which you have not challenged.
We did not challenge those findings, Your Honor, simply because we satisfied...
Whatever your reason, you didn't challenge them. Well, as I'm sure you know, you have a right to cross-appeal. You could have challenged the findings, and you did not. So we are starting here from the premise that these are illegitimate findings, since you don't like phony.
Okay. Your Honor, but those findings were used to justify the district court's discretion to remand the case for further proceedings rather than to remand for payment.
All right, and the issue before us is whether that is the proper consequence of those findings. Now we're getting down to the issue. We have findings that his reasons for rejecting the testimony were not legitimate. Now the question that we have before us is, does that mean we should remand so that they can try again? Is that a proper exercise of discretion? Or once your agency has had the chance and considered the issue and done it incorrectly, should they again be given a chance while a disabled person waits another 5 years to get benefits?
That is the option of the district court, and that is absolutely correct. Ventura said that is a perfectly legitimate action. And the fact that it has at this point been since 1999, again, is not unusual for such an extremely large organization with a massive...
Well, it may not be unusual, but it's certainly unfortunate for disabled people.
It may be unfortunate, Your Honor, but I would respectfully suggest that the first and foremost, in order to address that problem, that Congress would need to provide additional funds for expansion of the agency.
That would be a very good idea. I hope you go back and tell the agency to ask Congress for more funds. That would be an excellent idea, and good luck to you.
Well, exactly. Yes. Exactly, Your Honor. But I will also tell you that this agency and its employees operate under many, many, many productivity and quality standards. And yes, it takes some time to get through this system, just like any other system.
Well, again, I must say this was raised in your brief as to what the, one of the factors to consider is the length of time. And that's, you've asked us to use that as one of the two factors in our prudential examination. And I don't know what you consider to be an improper length of time for someone who's disabled to wait for benefits. Now, I don't want to blame it on the people who work in the agency. Whether, let's just talk about the United States government. It's, I understand that the agency does not get the treatment it might from the Congress or our president. But none of us can do anything about that. But we can consider, as you suggest, in deciding what should happen to a case, whether someone who's disabled and doesn't have benefits should be forced to wait more than 5 years while agencies make errors.
Well, again, I think that decision was up to the district court, and that was not an abuse of discretion in making the decision to be made to remand this case for further proceedings.
Thank you, counsel. Have a good trip back. Are you from Washington?
Am I originally from Oklahoma?
Oh, no. I mean, are you here from the...
Oh, I'm sorry, we're from Denver.
From Denver?
Denver,
OC. Okay. Well, have a good trip back to Denver. Okay. Counsel?
I understand that the district judge sent it back because he thought there was insufficient vocational... Okay, I thought the district judge sent it back because he thought there was insufficient vocational information. After he said, you know, the treating physicians have said this, and there was no good reason to reject that. So
you're right.
I guess I want to hear about whether there's enough vocational information.
You know, it was just the psychologist, Dr. Green. That was the only evidence we had. I would have to agree this thing needs to go back.
Is it your position that this case would not need the evidence of a vocational expert based on the medical evidence that you could go, assume we're in the original proceeding, that you would be entitled to benefits without any vocational expert testimony?
Yes, Judge. Would be a ludicrous thing for me to do, and I'm sure that's why I'm not the trial counsel in this case, but I'm sure that's why the trial counsel couldn't do it. You don't ask somebody who can't walk whether they can walk. And that's why I think this case is distinguishable from some of the other cases where this court rightly and correctly said this has to go back for vocational expert testimony. This is not one of those cases. My time is up.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both. The case just argued will be submitted. The next case on the calendar is Schnauz versus Barnhart.
Hello again.
Let me start out with the critical question.
Excuse me, Your Honor. My clock says that I have... Here we are.
Well, you're now down to a minute and 52.
Okay, now we're going.
Now
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Judge, but I only had a minute as you started talking.
So. Well, my thing, it gave you 20 minutes, so it's,
okay.
It's interesting. But I think we need to get right to the heart of the matter. If this goes...